Cast Iron is recorded on the lands of the Darug and Gandangara people. Hello, Skillets, and welcome back to another episode of Cast Iron, the show all about rock and metal. I am Alan Williamson, and I'm joined, as always, by Lewis Clark. Lewis, how are you going?
I'm doing good, buddy. Looking forward to this one.
That is good, because we were listening to this in the car this morning, and Jess said, I hope Lewis likes this, and I hope you like it too. this episode... we are working through King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard's album. It's going to take me a second to read through the title of this album. It's Petrodragonic Apocalypse, or Dawn of the Eternal Night, an Annihilation of Planet Earth and the Beginning of Merciless Damnation. An album title that pushes the limits of our podcast publishing platform. So, we're starting with this one. We've got a few gigs coming up. We have Metallica next weekend, which is going to be really good. Mm-hmm. We have Tim Minchin in a couple of weeks. He's playing at the ICC in Sydney. And one of the bands I'm going to see this month is King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. Mm-hmm. And they are playing at the Sydney Opera House with a full orchestra.
Okay, so I can't imagine they're going to play an awful lot of stuff for Petrodragonic Apocalypse.
Look, if they start taking requests, I will be shouting for some tracks off this album, but I think it's highly unlikely. And that's one of the really interesting things about this band. So had you heard of King Giz before I suggested this album?
So I had heard of them, yes, but my familiarity with them basically extended to the fact that they are incredibly prolific. That's all I really know about them. They produce an awful lot of music and of a wide variety of styles and shapes, and yeah, it's I knew that there was heavy music in their back catalogue, but I didn't know to what extent. And it would appear that it's only really extends to two records.
Yeah.
This being one of them.
Yeah.
That was kind of it.
That's good. I wouldn't claim to know much about them either, because they formed in 2010. And so in the past 15 years, they've released 27 studio albums and 63 live albums. Most of the live albums are actually bootlegs.
That's ridiculous.
And you can get them on Apple Music. I think it's called Bootleg Lizard. So they release most of the bootlegs on there, which is quite cool. And they famously are not available on Spotify. They pulled all of their music in the past few months. And I think that was in response to Daniel Ek, the founder of Spotify's investment in weapons manufacturers, essentially. That's what he's invested lots of money in.
Artists are doing a similar thing.
They're one of the more prominent artists that have done that. But like it's a bit like, they're kind of like the Devin Townsend of weird Aussie psychedelic rock bands. It's very hard to pin them down to one genre. They are mostly a psychedelic rock jam band, prog rock sort of thing. And sometimes the work is heavy, or has heavy aspects, but it's quite hard to boil down to one genre. Like they have three albums exploring microtones. For those of you who don't know what microtones is, which included me until I looked it up a couple of months ago, it's you know, whenever you think about music and the Western learning of music, you've got like an octave, right, of eight notes and stuff, and various chords and things. But microtones are all of the semitones in between those tones. So it's not just like B, B flat, A sharp and stuff like that. This is more like B, something else, something else, something else, B flat, something else, something else. And so they released an album called Microtonal Flying Banana, which is all about, it's all microtonal songs, where they made their own instruments to record it. But this in many ways is a metal album by a non-metal band, which is, I don't think something we've really done before. You're right, that is their second. Yeah. Their first album that was quite thrashy was called Infest the Rat's Nest. They controversially won an ARIA award a few years ago, which is like the Australian, equivalent of, I don't know, Brit Awards or something, maybe the BAFTAs or something.
Which they won
for Nonagon Infinity, which won the best hard rock or metal album, despite not being a metal album. So that pissed off a lot of the Aussie metalcore bands out there. But this is very much a metal album, I would say. And it's deliberately so. They do have other metal-y tracks in some of their other albums. We might get that later. But yeah, this is kind of a look. There is a plot to it, kind of. The quote I found on Wikipedia was, it's about humankind and it's about planet Earth, but it's also about witches and dragons and shit. So it's kind of... It's not like Dream Theater where you can go look up the entire plot of it. But it's about, witches summoning a evil petrol dragon that destroys the world in flame. It's all a bit silly fun. It's not too preachy.
Yeah. And you've hit on the thing that really surprised me with this, is that I didn't know what I was getting myself in for, to be honest with you. Because I was like, is this going to be them doing it straight-laced, or is this going to be a little bit more, you know, like a parody? And it's not really either, to be honest with you. It's more homage, it's more pastiche. There is a clear love for heavy metal and the genre, because it touches on lots of things. It's prog metal, it's thrash, it's got a bit of classic rock in there, it's got a bit of stoner, you know, it's a real dirty, raw production. And you can tell they're having an awful lot of fun and not taking themselves very seriously. But at the same time, I can see how that would piss off the metal faithful, because it's like, okay, you've turned out a metal record that isn't really in keeping with an awful lot of what people like about metal, which is that sincerity, that po-facedness that is kind of missing from this. I don't dislike that as a thing, at all. I have a lot of fun with that, but I can see why it would rub people the wrong way when they're not from a traditionally metal background and they're doing metal. It's like, yeah, I guess it would be more challenging to make a po-faced, serious metal record when you're just kind of having fun with the genre. So that is an interesting thing that I was quite surprised by when I started listening to this. I was like, oh, okay, it's not very straight-laced. This is actually quite... They're just having a laugh, you know. They're lads that like metal and having a laugh.
Yeah, a lot of their albums. I would describe it as musically sincere, but thematically and lyrically very silly. And I think that's really where they have the fun. And a lot of their albums are a bit goofy like that. I'm trying to think about, like, this is where I shouldn't put myself on the spot, but they have a wide variety of albums. Like the last album they did before this was called Ice, Death, Planets, Lungs, Mushrooms, and Lava. And they're just singing random songs about lava being sticky like peanut butter. There's a song about mushrooms for 7 minutes. but that's more of a straight up prog rock with a bit of jazz fusion. But it's musically very sincere. And I think, as you say, they're clearly enjoying what they're doing, but they're also having fun. And that's kind of the essence of a jam band, is the way they recorded this album. They roughly had an idea, and Stu McKenzie, who's sort of the band leader and principal songwriter, he said, you know, they basically wrote a song a day. He had an idea of what story the song was going to tell, and he'd portioned it out into 7 song titles, and they had a bit of a paragraph of what would happen in that song. And then they work backwards from that, and then they come up with the riffs, and they come up with the tunes, and that's how they built the album backwards. So it's a different it's a different approach to recording, but I think it's both sincere and silly. It's kind of like The Darkness. Maybe that's the closest thing to it. The Darkness takes the piss out of the all the songs about shagging and stuff, right? From glam rock and stuff, but it's still musically sincere and it's well written music.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, now you can tell that it's more pastiche than, you know, parody. It's there's a clear love for the source material, even if it's you know, not taking itself too seriously, definitely. It's interesting that you mentioned that the song titles sort of came first and they wrote the songs around the theme, because that is something I definitely, like, I don't know, I'm subconsciously felt it, because you, like, instantly, like, the first track, it sounds like driving music, you know, like you're going on yeah. a journey, you know?
Yeah.
And, yeah, it definitely matches the title for sure. Yeah, no, I was surprised, and yeah, I was having a great time with this record, I've got to say. Like, it's not going to be one of these ones where I'm coming away at the end of it going like, don't know if it wasn't for me or not, but like, yeah, this is an awful lot of fun. And I think that's the thing you really need to go into this record knowing, is that this isn't a band taking metal particularly seriously, but there is a clear love for metal in its veins, you know. So, you know, let your hair down, have a good time, because that's what this record is doing for sure.
Well, let's get into it then. So, first cab off the rank, so to speak, is Motor Spirit. Oh, holy rebel, we are the stand to quiver like a crippled head. Gaia seas of didn't melt sand, worship with thy groaning hand. Cold black cloud horizon, maketh land born petromizers. Summon forth thy motor spirit, drink the fucking gas to kill it. So this one, like, as soon as the drums kick in, you know you're in for a fun time, right? It's
definitely
very fast and thrashy. The first 3 minutes are an onslaught. Yep. And it's a good example of how Stu McKenzie writes lyrics, lots of silly rhyming and like tongue-in-cheek humor throughout.
The speed of this, just out of the gate, and I'm looking at the clock and I'm like, this is an 8-minute song. How are they going to keep this up for 8 minutes? the song basically starts with like a guitar solo. It absolutely rips as well. So Stu McKenzie's vocals are an interesting one. Like, so they're sung, but he sings with like a sort of deep fry effect to his voice. So
yes,
it reminds me quite a lot of like Motorhead. It's got that sort of Levy quality to it. It's clearly sung, but you know, it's got a rough and readiness to it.
It's a bit like a James Hetfield delivery, like that, but
but
probably not very as similar, not definitely. As tuneful. Like, I mean, Stu McKenzie can sing. I think the only song you really hear him singing in properly is Converge. This is not what he normally sings like, so he's really pushing himself to do, that deeper fry stuff. Sometimes it almost sounds like throat singing whenever he's saying Motor Spirit. It's got that gargle
There's one song in particular. Absolutely. I think I mentioned it later on in this in my notes, actually. I wanted to talk about like how I really like the way the lead guitar melodies contrast with the rhythm guitar. So the rhythm guitar has obviously got this sort of galloping, thrashy quality to it, as the lead guitars sort of like to follow sort of like Eastern melodies, almost. Like they're very sort of ethereal.
It is very Middle Eastern, and I think that's part of the psychedelic stonery nature of it. But like Middle Eastern music, especially like Turkish rock, is kind of the home of the microtone. And you do hear a little bit of that in there, like some of the keys they're choosing and the way it moves. But yes, there is a Middle Eastern influence to it. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, it was one of those things where it's like I didn't know like who I could quite compare it to, and strangely, like the thing that sort of came to mind the most was like System of a Down, I guess, like another band that work in those sort of like Eastern qualities to their music, but being still quite heavy. I would say that it's not super comparable though. Like, I think overall, when you're listening to this record, I think the thing you're really getting from it is an awful lot of thrash. There's definitely a big thrash influence over this, but also a lot of like stoner, that sort of classic rock bluesy kind of quality to it.
There's a kind of Caius sound to it.
And I think that comes from...
Yeah,
that was the thing. I was almost tempted to pick another Caius record for my further listening, but I was like, I did that last episode. Let's not hit Caius every single
time.
There's
a bit of Caius. I think there's quite a bit of Tool in this, in some of the drum grooves and the extrapolations. And it's similar to how Tool will have a core theme for a song and they'll do a bit of exploration around it. King Giz do that where they lay down, you know, here's the Motor Spirit riff, and then they're going to expand on that, and they're going to twist it around a bit, which that's that's what jam rock is. That's to some extent, that's what prog rock is, right? It doesn't have the same. To me, prog rock shifts dramatically between sections. Like it can be quite a stark cut off between here's the main riff and then there'll be like a big section change. Almost like you're listening to the overture of a musical. This is more of a this is more of a jam rock, psychedelic rock. It's going to evolve over the course of the 8 minutes or 10 minutes of the song, but it's got that it's got that hard core to it. And this has that and the galloping drums.
Completely. But then obviously the big thing that happens with this one is it does break down. It slows down quite a bit, a little bit, and changes tone. And it becomes a lot more tribal. Like it's not too dissimilar actually to like something like Sepultura's Roots, you know. We get the really deep, throaty repetition of Motor Spirit. Like
I can't do it. I don't know how I don't know. I clearly don't do throat singing, I just do back of the mouth singing, which is close but not quite. So not with this one, yes, you get that breather and then you get that fatter the riff comes back a bit slower and fatter and sludgier and dirtier. There's that big extended guitar solo. But then you're saying, how are they going to let do this for 8 minutes? And the answer is, 7 minutes, fuck it, we're going double time. And it comes back even faster and the drums and just finishes it off nicely.
It's such a cool song. Yeah, no, I had a real good time. Like, as an opening statement for an album, this is doing so much and still being cohesive and taking you on a journey, and it never felt like, oh god, this is dragging or anything like that. This is an absolute belter to start off this record with. I really, really enjoyed Motor Spirit. I like the journey it takes you on. It's an absolute wild one. But yeah, it's like you say, that sort of build up around the 5 minute mark sort of gets more of that stoner rock kind of influence, goes in again with this sort of mystical Eastern style guitar leads again, and then that final burst of speed at 7 minutes is just absolutely takes that song home. A great start to this record, I've got to say. Really enjoyed Motor Spirit.
So let's crack on to the next one then. Next track is Supercell. So I don't know if you anticipated this just being one long, uninterrupted 48-minute song, but that's what it is. We go straight into the next one, and it's another fast and thrashy track. The drums, I think, give this so much forward motion. It's their drummer really takes on the reins in this.
Yeah, I think it's got more of a classic heavy metal sound to this one. Not so like overtly thrashy and tribal and groovy, but that, like you say, the double bass really does give the whole thing an immediacy, which I was really impressed with. The thing that it really reminded me of was Overkill by Motorhead. That's the thing that really sort of like struck me with this one. It's got that sort of groove to it. It's got that energy, that sort of punch. But yeah, more of a traditional rock song structure to this one. It has clear sort of verses and choruses and a middle eight. And a great little solo around 2:40, which I really enjoyed as well.
Very Megadeth-y. I've written down the guitar interlude in the middle. It is quite a Metallica / Trivium sound. But the noodly solo is it sounds very, very Dave Mustaine-y to me.
Yeah. No, I can hear that for sure. It's again a lovely sort of blend of styles. Like again, they're not really just tying to one sort of overall sound or pastiche that they want to hit. Like I say, I'm hearing a lot of Caius, I'm hearing a lot of Tool, I'm hearing a lot of Motorhead. It actually reminded me an awful lot like of Dave Grohl's Probot. I don't know if you've listened to that record, where he sort of like every song is themed around a specific vocalist, and they're almost like pastiches of that artist's own like band's work and stuff like that. So there is a song with Lemmy that sounds like a Motorhead song. With Max Cavalera that sounds like a Sepultura song.
Is the Lemmy one, was it called Shake Your Blood? Is that the Lemmy one?
That's the
okay,
one.
Okay, I have heard. I don't think I've listened to the full album, but I have heard that song.
Yeah, no, that album I would definitely was also thinking about for further listening, but again, I've sidestepped that a little bit. But again, overall, I think that is very similar to this record in that it feels like it's like, oh, you know, there's a love of metal in here, but lots of different metal. So they approached it a little bit differently in that, like, it was themed around vocalists and their style of music, whereas, you know, this is like taking bits and pieces from everywhere and sort of making it work within a certain song or structure. But again, it's difficult to say, like, there's a specific song. There are 7 tracks on this record, but if you listen to this as a cohesive piece, it is just one long experience. So yeah, it's nice to have the breaks for sure. But yeah, as a result, it makes it easier for us to talk about the record for sure.
Yeah,
going, oh, and then at this time slot, like, this thing's happening.
Yeah, you have to pick it out minute to minute in some of these tracks. That's just to help you cut in the bits. And and if we get copyright stricken in this one, I will absolutely be emailing the band to say, hey guys, do us a solid. We're just trying to do a nice podcast with your fun album.
We like your stuff, please.
I remember this album came out in June 2023, so it's very recent. Yep. And it's probably the most recent album we've recorded for this show. I was training for the Sydney Marathon at the time, and I used to listen to this on my long runs whenever I really, really had to, you know, had 10K left to do and it was starting to
lock in. Yeah,
I would just stick this on and get into the zone. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's perfect for that.
No, for sure. But yeah, Supercell is another really enjoyable track. I like the contrast between the prog thrash of the first track and then this one being a little bit more of a classic traditional rock kind of song structure, but with, you know, very clear influences from heavy metal and old stuff. It's funny that we've done this record after Black Sabbath's Master of Reality, because if King Gizzard don't like Children of the Grave, then I'll eat my hat. Because, like, you could hear that all over this record. The gallop in particular. So yeah, no, I mean, it's funny, I was watching, there's a music video for Dragon, and
fantastic.
Yeah, and they're wearing a lot of t-shirts, and I was just like, okay, who are we influenced by? Like, who's taking where are we taking influence? I saw an Iron Maiden t-shirt, I saw a Motorhead t-shirt, I'm pretty sure I saw a Black Sabbath t-shirt. Yeah, so it's just like, okay, yeah, I see where you guys are at mentally and what was going on, like, influence wise to this.
Iron Maiden is one band cool I don't stuff. Hear that much in this, and this is where we should do a video podcast, because I'm currently drinking some very metal lemongrass and ginger tea from my Iron Maiden mug. Thanks, Daniel. Yeah, yeah. It was a present from our show theme composer.
I see the Wicker Man on that. Yeah. Mm. Yeah,
but it's not. That's the one band I don't hear a lot of in this album, and that's not a problem. But I definitely hear more Motorhead, Metallica, Black Sabbath.
Yeah, I guess like this album is clearly tuned down, and I think that gives it more of a groove metal quality over Iron Maiden, who would obviously tune traditionally, you know, E to G. And sound a lot more brighter as a result. But I think there is an influence, and I think it's mainly the gallop, you know, like that definitely shows up on quite a few songs. I'd say the gallop is definitely noticeable on Motor Spirit. But yeah, it's not as overtly classic heavy metal. It's more of that sort of groovy, down-tuned quality that you get with something like a Machine Head or a Sepultura, you know. So yeah, cool stuff. We'll move on to the next track then, I guess.
Yeah, so the next track is Converge. Lower sight mode, tire and blink. From your celestial burst of peak, the earth shake, the earth quiver. A startling twisted pillar delivers. So we get more drum rolls and grinding riffs. At this point, you might have thought, oh, like, is this whole album going to be very, very samey? And then it does settle into more of a sludgy head-banging groove. It's not quite so fast and pummeling.
Yeah. I think the thing with this one is it starts with a really big Slayer-like thrash riff to open it. Then it sort of settles into a more of a mid-paced groove, but even though it's not going hell for leather, that doesn't absolutely stop the drummer from going mental. he's having a grand old time, like, just peppering some of the most crazy fills I think I've ever heard on a song. Like, he's really just going for it. Like, this whole structure has allowed that guy to really flex his pipes.
And there's quite a lot
and
of
just go absolutely
there's,
crazy.
There's quite a lot of syncopated drum rhythms. You notice that in the chorus, if you call it the bridge, when you hear the actual singing for the first time, you hear those drums going on the, so it's all on the offbeat while they're on the front, or someone's out of sync with someone else.
But it's
very, very nicely done. And then about 3 minutes, it all goes a bit Tool. Then we get the chanting, and then you get the Tool. I don't know if it's a tabla, but it's that kind of like, it's that kind of Danny Carey drum sound comes in.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, like I've got that as like another sort of Tribal-esque breakdown that you get around 3:30, and then for the last moments of the song, we're back into a big heavy metal riff, and we get the song title Converge repeated an awful lot. Doesn't sound anything like Converge the band, mind you. I saw a comment on this song saying, like, I think now Converge need to write a song called King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard.
That's it. Like, I said that about, they've got a, King Gizzard have an album called Omnium Gatherum, and I said, now Omnium Gatherum need to release an album called King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. I think what's interesting about the second half of this track is it's quite bluesy. There's this big bluesy breakdown, and it's quite similar to, I think it's the closest the album ever gets to a quote-unquote normal King Giz album. But their output's so varied that's difficult to pin down. But the bluesy breakdown sounds quite a lot like Rattlesnake, which is the opening track off Flying Microtonal Banana. You can hear some of the similarities there, and often they will have more... A bluesy sound is probably the best way I could describe it. Yeah, so that's the closest you would get to something else. But this is it's very varied, and it's very different to anything they've ever put out.
Yeah. It's still like a heavy record by any. That's the thing we need to keep when we're talking about different genres, and we're talking about blues and stuff like that. I think you can hear those influences for sure, but it doesn't detract from the fact that the overall song is very much a heavy metal song, you know. And there's more than enough drive and speed and groove to it that you know solidifies it as being metal. But at the same time, it's nice to hear. Oh, there's bits of King Giz's, like, you know, psych rock and stuff, like, influencing this as well. It's clearly them. It's just like, how do we get those influences to work naturally within a metal structure? And I think they make it work really well. Like I say, like, just influencing that blues element gives it like a nice sort of desert rock stoner kind of quality to it. Again, very sort of Black Sabbath, very sort of Caius. It just makes it really unique. It's one of those records where I was like, okay, this doesn't sound like you're overtly parodying anybody in particular. It feels like you have found a sound that is yours, and you're just taking lots of little influences from the genre that you can work in there to keep it unique. And I think that's what makes this record work so well, is that it's not just, oh yeah, we're going to take the piss out of glam rock for half an hour. We've got a love for the genre that we want to share, and it comes in lots of different things, you know, like you say, we've mentioned Tool, we've mentioned Sepultura, we've mentioned Motorhead, you know, like it's all different influences that are melding together to create a lovely sort of melting pot of metal. Yeah, really good fun.
As you were talking there about having their own unique sound, I was thinking of other King Giz albums, and they have names like Nonagon Infinity, Gumboot Soup, Laminated Denim, and I was thinking, I could make up anything here, and Lewis wouldn't know if it was an album title or not. I really could come up with, you know, it could be Carbonated Water Bottle. You'd be like, oh yeah, I'll give that one a listen after. And like, no. Threw that one in there to mix you up. That's what I've got next to me. It's they're a wacky bunch.
Yeah, no, the titling of like albums reminds me an awful lot of Rob Zombie. He's got these really long album titles that have like stupid names, and it's just like whatever words sound good that day. There's something about like the Monster Kool-Aid that he did recently or something like that, and it's part of this huge long title. I'm gonna have to look it up now because that's gonna absolutely bother me otherwise. But yeah, very similar sort of yeah, titling structure to their records, where it's just a load of nonsense words that sound kind of good together. Let me find that bloody Rob Zombie record. That's going to really annoy me.
I think I find my favorite King is one. They released an EP called Satanic Slumber Party, which is a collab with Tropical Fuckstorm.
Of course it is. That makes absolute sense to me. Yes. Right, Rob Zombie discography. Here we go. They have an album called The Lunar Injection Kool-Aid Eclipse Conspiracy. That's the one I was thinking of. And things like The Electric Warlock Acid Witch Satanic Orgy Celebration Dispenser.
Is that all one album name?
Yeah. Yeah, that's that. Well, no, those are two records.
Okay, I was like, wow, awesome. That's quite something. Oh,
yeah, man. Venomous Rat Regeneration Vendor. Yeah. they definitely share a similar... sense of humor when it comes to titling records, for
that's
sure.
Like that one sounds like a Dark Souls boss, Venomous Rat Regeneration Vendor. All right, we should probably carry on with the discussion. Yeah. More formally, so the next track is Witchcraft. I love the intro to this one. I love that it goes straight in that really great riff and the vocals, like repeating the melody before the drum polyrhythm kicks in. It's just so dramatic. And I think the first few tracks are, they're not samey, but there's definitely similarities. They've got that hard thrashiness to it. And this turns into the track into a little bit of a centerpiece. After those songs, it's a clear break from what went before.
Yeah, no, for sure. I've mentioned the exact same things. I really like the intro. I really like the way the riff and the vocals match. The vocals are sort of punctuating the chords as the riff progresses, but then it continues. It's like that is basically the vocal structure for this song. It's like it's hitting those beats, you know, and it's really interesting. It makes for just a really unique sound. I'd say that this one was probably the one where you could hear the most sort of psych rock influence coming through on this record. You know, like I'm not massively familiar with King Gizzard's like discography, but I'd say like this one was the most traditionally, oh yeah, I can hear the King Gizzard sound permeating this metal song now. It's because I have to reiterate, like this isn't a like weird psychedelic exploration of rock or anything like that. This is still a heavy metal song. There is a high energy to it, lots of driving drums and guitar solos and things like that, but it's got that sort of weirdo psych rock quality to it. And then we got the introduction of the sort of Eastern guitar melodies coming in on the lead again. It's just there's something a little bit more vibey to this one, you know, like they're doing something a little bit more atmospheric and a little bit more explorative of just tone and style, you know, like it's not so overtly let's play tribute to a load of metal bands. Like this one is feels like, okay, the King Gizzard sound is working its way into the metal now, you know. It's starting to show itself a little bit more overtly. Yeah, it's a really cool song. I really like that they are doing interesting things with the metal formula and not just paying homage to loads of bands they like. Very impressive, actually.
This is the first song where you get the King goes, woo! There's plenty of more of those but that is very much a signature thing. It's not a King Gizzard album unless somebody at some point shouts, woo! So to the extent that this album has a discernible plot, in this song, a witch's ritual is disrupted by a black cat and turns a harmless skink into a monstrous dragon. That was what I managed to get out of reading the lyrics. So there's one band that springs to mind, and when you talk about psychedelic rock and heavy metal, the middle section from around the 2:30 mark to the 3:45 has that creepy 80s prog rock goblin sound to it. It's very Dawn of the Dead. It's got that synth and guitar interplay. Yeah. It's kind of groovy and jazzy while remaining heavy. And you know, if you're I don't know if you're a goblin connoisseur, but to my mind, it's
I know Dawn of the Dead and I know their soundtrack. Yeah.
You know the Dawn of the Dead Eurocut with the goblin soundtrack. Did I ever tell you about the time I was back in Northern Ireland, and I think my brother Paul had said, we're going to watch Dawn of the Dead at the Waterfront Hall in Belfast, and Goblin were playing the soundtrack live over the movie.
That's incredible.
It was wicked, and I came out of nowhere. They somehow got tickets to it, and it was so cool. But they've got that they've got that real the double bass drumming and the eerie synths. And I hear a lot of that in this. But it is groovy, it is jazzy, but it's still very, very heavy. The guitar solo at the end of this is awesome. Lots of tapping and, of course, another big woo. This one always gets stuck in my head. Like, after listening to the album, going to house, going, witchcraft. Over it. It's really a worm.
Oh, even you just humming the riff there, I'm just like, oh, yeah. No, totally.
Yeah, you know it now.
No, it's one of those things. I listened to this quite quickly a couple of times through and making notes while I was doing that sort of thing. So I don't have the same associated nostalgia for it. It was clearly this was a 2023 album that got a lot of play for you, whereas I'm quite new to this still. So it's I need to try and recall certain riffs and things because it's all a bit fresh to me. But definitely. You reminded me of the Witchcraft one there. That's cool.
This was the...
Yeah, no, it's a fun song.
This one was just an instant classic for me. I think I just just fell in love with it as soon as I heard it. Wow, this is really special. And I had listened to quite a few of their albums before. But whenever I heard they were doing a full-on metal one, and we can get into it a little bit because the next track is Gila Monster. And this was the lead single. And whenever I first heard it, I was not a huge fan of it. And I think, I guess I just, I'm not sure, but because their music is so varied and so interesting and they come off the back of stuff like Omnium Gatherum and the Mushroom album, I thought, okay, they're doing metal. But there's not a huge amount to this, but I think it's so much better in the full context of the album. This one's a real, real grower for me. It's got that, it's slower paced, it's very stompy and sludgy. It's got this rhythm of. And it opens with a big bendy psychedelic guitar solo. They throw so much into it. But if you're not singing along to the chorus of this one, if you're not doing it, Gila, Gila. Or the classic line, and the Gila, the blood spiller, the witch killer, Gila, Gila, and the Godzilla. It's such a great vocal harmony. The pulse of the song is just infectious.
Yeah, no, for sure. I really, really enjoy Gila Monster. I think this is a really fun song. It's like you say, big and stompy and sludgy. It's probably the most mid-paced song on the record. It reminded me a lot of High on Fire. That was the sort of thing I was getting from this one in particular. It's a song where you can clearly hear these are just a group of lads having a great time making heavy music and they love fantasy. And it's just, it's like this is clearly a band having a lot of fun, and that's infectious as a result. It's very simple in its structure, but it makes it more immediate as a result. And I found it quite easy to like as a result of that as well. But again, I didn't have the sort of experience that you did where this was a lead single and you were listening to it out of context. I've only experienced this in context with the record.
I love it now, but it did take me to take it a little while to grow on me. One of the things I like about it is that after a while you get a kind of vocal solo It's like somewhere between a more bluesy chant and scat singing where the rhythm changes. And it's a really different way to boost the energy of a song. And I couldn't think of anything I'd heard like that. I mean, maybe it is.
Not within metal.
Yeah. And maybe it is a blues thing. But I thought that was just a really interesting observation. I was thinking, how do they... That was part of what I was thinking about as I listened to this more critically this time, is how do they keep the energy going through a song that really is a kind of a more standard verse, chorus, verse song? And I was like, oh yeah, that's what they've done. They've like added even more. They just added even more to the vocals and some intense rhymes.
I do wonder as well, one of the things I learned about this record was that I think there's 6 or 7 members of King Gizzard, right? Mm-hmm. I think there used to be 7, and Eric, the guy that managed them, kind of has taken a step back from what I can gather, and now it's 6. So one of the things I learned about Petrodragonic Apocalypse is that it is written by only 3 of the members. Mm-hmm. So it's Stu McKenzie and then a guitarist and a drummer, I think, was the only people that collaborated to the actual writing structure of this. And I wonder if that's what's pushed him to do things like that vocal phrasing. Because it's like, okay, what other things can I do with the limited amount of instruments and whatnot that we've got kicking around whilst we're writing this? And I'm wondering if it's like, well, I'll just use my vocals. And then maybe that was how they demoed it, and it just worked well enough that they continued to, record the full song that way with the vocals being that thing that keeps the energy high.
I've got the Wikipedia page up, and according to the... So they've credited the music to all 6 of them, and the lyrics are written by 5 of them. So who didn't write the lyrics? The drummer did not do the lyrics, but Stu McKenzie produced it, and I know he does play guitar and bass. I don't think he's the lead one, but he does a bit of everything. He's a real multi instrumentalist, and Stu McKenzie produced the album, which is pretty cool. And the production I think is excellent. It's just mucky enough.
Definitely. I get the idea that they're a real sort of musicians band. Yeah. Like, I think everybody is a multi-instrumentalist from what I can understand.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
as a result, like, when you see live footage of them, it's like they're all in different places. I've seen Stu on the keyboard quite a lot.
Yes.
So, yeah, clearly it's just a case of, like, whatever needs to make the song work, we'll just jump around and,
stuck in. I mean, that's one of the... I'm so excited to see them in Australia, because they haven't toured Australia for 2 years. They do a lot of touring in the States. America probably has more of that history of psychedelic rock and jam bands. You know, there's bands like, obviously, Grateful Dead would be the most famous one, but bands like Fish and Goose and stuff that are always touring the country. And they get more of an audience there. Maybe there's only so many places you can play in Australia, right? Before it's just, 5 people in a caravan park. Once you get outside of the major cities.
I did notice they played London recently, and they did like 2 nights back to back with different set lists, very similar to sort of what Metallica are doing at the moment. I guess if you've got a discography that wide and dense, then why not? God knows how you rehearse for a tour like that.
I don't know what they do.
I wouldn't be able to remember 2 sets, let alone 1.
They play like 3-hour mammoth sets as well.
It's crazy.
So eventually,
let's move on.
Gila Monster comes to an end, slows down a bit, and it ends with the All Hail King Gila. And then we go into Dragon. That opening riff, holy shit. So it opens with this really rapid drum fill, and then you get this unbelievably catchy drum guitar face off.
Yeah.
And then you get to the bit where they finally start saying Petro Dragonic Apocalypse. It just goes hard as fuck for 2.5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. This is another one where I'm just like, how is this going to keep up this energy for 9 minutes? Like, it is insane. So yeah, this is the first of the last two tracks, and they're both 9 minute like opuses. Yeah. So yeah, this is an incredibly fun song. Like, it's not taking itself seriously at all, with all the repeated mentions of dragon,
stop the dragon.
But yeah, like you say, like that opening start of the song is like a real driving double bass drumming right up until like 2:40, where it sort of breaks down and starts to get a little bit more desert rock and psychedelic. Then we have that build up at 5:20, double bass kicks back in. Really progressive track. No clear chorus on and verses on this one. It's a constantly evolving sort of, you know, jam, essentially. And it really takes you for a ride. But the thing that really, like, made this one hit for me was the gallopy, stompy bit that starts around 6:30.
Do you know what's so good about it? I love that you've seen the music video, because in the music video,
yes,
that's, yeah, when, the, that's so when the dragon is in sync and it's going dook-a-dook-a-dook. You see the little paws moving?
I love that as well, because like the view of the dragon in the video is like isometric, almost like an old game like Syndicate or something like that.
it's
really fun.
There was something I was reading about the music video for that where he had said, over the last 2 months, I dusted off my music video computer to slay the 10-minute dragon. I wanted to explore a harsh, distorted visual palette using my live visual setup mixed with PS1 cutscene-inspired animation and studio footage I filmed with the
band.
There
we go.
The animation was created using Cinema 4D, processed through After Effects, and a Tachyon's circuit bent video unit. So before we get to the dug-a-dug-a-dug bit, the repetition... And it is, there's a repetition to it that's almost meditative. It is very Tool.
Yeah.
And before you get to the climax of the song, there's this nice little bass interlude, and probably the best cheesy metal lyrics of the whole album, which is the eye dilates, the air gyrates, a gate in the sky, a portal to die, a shriek from space, a mangled yell, dragon descends, welcome to hell. There's also quite a lot of Latin lyrics. I have no idea what it all means, but it sounds very sinister and important. I think... when you get to the 6 minute mark where they start singing the Dawn of Eternal Night, build up that starts with that the drums and then the guitar lick comes in, and it's awesome, and then it goes back to the rhythm and it gets a bit heavier, and then it goes to the guitar groove, and then you'll have to put this in, you'll have to cut in this specific bit, but it's around 7:30. The guitar stays the same. It's in the... but the bass rises up a key. The bass starts to lift up. And then the guitar follows it up to this crescendo around the 8:22 mark. And there's one final heavy grinding bit. And then they start doing the Dawn of Eternal Light again. And you go, oh my God, what a great song. That's it.
Yeah.
And the song kind of fades out. And then it goes right back into the opening riff. And I think at that point, that's probably the peak of the album. And it just goes from great to legendary. And you're like, this is just...
yeah.
There's something really special about this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It is a real standout moment. Like, I can see why you picked it as a single. I'm still like, it's still bonkers to me that you would pick a 9 minute song for a single. But at the same time, I'm like, well, when it's doing this much and it's taking you on such an incredible journey and just having so much fun doing it, like, yeah, it makes perfect sense in the grand scheme of things. And again, a perfect choice of visuals for the music video. I think it really, really works well with what they've created. Creates an amazing tone and vibe. And like I say, if you want to see what they were influenced by, then just look at their t-shirts, because there's an awful lot of old school classic heavy metal going on in those t-shirts.
I think if you haven't listened to this going into this episode, and you're in any way tempted, in fact, even if you're not tempted, you should definitely check out the music video for Dragon. You'll probably be hooked off that. That's a good introduction to the to the album for sure. But it's not over yet. And I think
it
could end at that point, and I would be like, yep, okay, that was a really good album, but we've got one more song. It's another 9 minute song, and that is Flamethrower. Is there anything more metal than thrash riffs and someone shouting flamethrower?
No, there isn't, I'm afraid. This one absolutely explodes out the gate. Such a heavy start to the song. Like, the introduction to this might be the heaviest moment on this record, for sure. It's really, really cool. Again, we get that similar sort of like playoff with the lead guitar melodies, which have that sort of ethereal Eastern sound to it. But it contrasts so well with the heavy tuned down like rhythm guitar. It's so cool. You finally get a breather on this one around the 4 minute mark, where it introduces the tribal drumming, and we've mentioned them quite a few times in this, but this was the time when I really felt it. It's got like a Tool like riff to it. Like it's really sort of progressive metal sound. It's really cool. And then once again, we get that sort of psychedelia gets reintroduced, and it ends with electronics. And what I did also know about this record is that it shares a sequel, I think.
Yeah, the Silver Cord,
which is all electronica.
So that is a very good synopsis of that. The first 4 minutes are pretty intense. I'm not really sure what the Dragons got against the International Space Station. They mention it destroying the ISS a lot, and I couldn't really find any rationale behind that, but maybe it's just so apocalyptic that it blows beyond the atmosphere. But yes, at the 4 minute mark, it dissolves away into an extended proggy space rock jam. It's got a Middle Eastern groove, got some synthy strangeness, it's quite Osric Tentacles. And this does tie it into the Silver Cord. Now, it's not quite a companion album. It does have some callbacks. Yeah. The Silver Cord, I didn't tell you to listen to it because it's a weird synth electronic album. But the interesting thing about the Silver Cord is that we've talked a little bit about these long, meditative, repetitious elements, which is very Tool as well, expansions on a theme.
Yeah.
And the Silver Cord comes in two flavors. It has it is two albums. One is a short version, and the short version is about 28 minutes. And then there's an extended mix, which is 88 minutes long. So the first track goes from being 3 minutes to 20. And the extended one is an awesome album to work to. It's a weird synthy album, very different.
So it's interesting you mentioned an extended mix, because I think this album also has an extended mix. When you get it on vinyl, there is an eighth song which is like 14 minutes long or something.
So the eighth song,
I didn't want to check it out, but I did want to mention it just because you know, most people's experience of this record, if you're streaming it or whatever, however you access it, like, easily, you're going to get the 7-track version, even if it's on CD and stuff like that. Whereas the vinyl version, have you heard that 8th track?
I listened to it for the first time this afternoon.
Interesting. Okay.
It is a 14-minute spoken word telling of the story.
Oh, okay.
And it has ambient music in the background, which is mostly slowed down versions of some of the songs. So you'll hear a little bit of the riff of Witchcraft, a little bit of Dragon in there. But it's essentially a 14 minute spoken word song by, it's read by, let me find it.
Yeah, they collaborated with someone, didn't they, for it? Yeah, I saw that. Yes,
why did I delete that tab? Sorry, it's very unprofessional of me. Oh, I got ahead of myself, clicked on the wrong album. It's Leah Senior, who is an Aussie folk musician that they've collaborated with in the past.
Okay.
But it's not a, I thought, yeah, I should probably give this a go because I'd never listened to it. It's not.
Yeah, yeah.
It's more of a straight up bonus track rather than another good track. It's totally different.
Right, okay. That's good to know. That's good to know. I was worried that I was missing something important.
No, I would say it is an inessential curio.
Yeah, no, for sure. That makes sense. That makes sense. But yeah, we've come to the end of the record, the original running order anyway, and yeah, I had a really good time with this, Alan. This was an awesome recommendation. Again, I think this is going to hit certain people in different ways. I think if you're looking for, you know, serious, like, involved heavy metal album that, like, takes the genre seriously, I don't know if this is going to do it for you, because there is clearly a lot of pastiche. There's a lot of, like, just having a bit of a laugh with the whole, you know, concept of making metal records, and it's coming from a band that don't traditionally make heavy music, you know, like, that's, they are a rock band for sure, but, like, at the same time, they are not overtly making heavy metal, as a result, like, it may rub you the wrong way, depending on how you feel. But if you let your hair down, have a bit of fun, and just, like, indulge yourself in a band that are, like, clearly also indulging themselves by just letting their hair down and enjoying all the heavy metal that they've grown up listening to, and sort of adding it to this big melting pot to create a sound that is strangely unique. You know, you wouldn't have thought that, like, paying homage to so many different bands, you might feel like it would just come away as like, oh, this is King Gizzard just ripping off a load of people and it's not really working. But it is so its own thing and so King Gizzard that it's worth experiencing just to have a good time. Like, you've got to ignore the silly lyrics and stuff sometimes, but at the same time, I think that gives it an energy and a sense of fun that really, really make this an awful lot of fun to listen to. I had a great time with this. I don't think it's a bad record by any stretch of the imagination, but I can see how it would rub the metal faithful a little bit, you know, the wrong way. I can see how it would annoy them, but at the same time, yeah, I think if you can just have a bit of fun, then you're going to have a great time with this record, because it is loads of fun, and yeah, loads of cool sounds and influences permeating the overall thing, and it's lovely to be able to try and pick them out. But there's lots of really cool little stuff that they're doing that's completely their own. You know, you can hear their psych rock influence, like, being melded into this metal record, and it's really fun. Yeah, a great time. How about you, Alan? How's your overall feelings about this record 2 years after it was released?
I think I love it more every time I listen to it. And even though it only came out 2 years ago, it's such a comfort record for me. I could happily listen to it forever. We haven't really talked about it explicitly in the podcast, but heavy metal's quite silly. Heavy metal is a silly genre. If you don't think, you know, people wearing corpse paint or Eddie running around on a stage while Iron Maiden sing songs about World War II, or Rob Halford flying into a gig on a giant motorbike, leather clad. These are inherently very silly things. Songs about witches, absolutely, goblins and wizards. You know, heavy metal's very silly. We're not saying it's not to be enjoyed seriously, or it's not musically good.
No, absolutely. But
it always has an inherent silliness. And
yeah, and I think the more you embrace that, the anybody more fun you accepts have. That.
Yes, yeah,
the more fun definitely, you'll have. Definitely. Yeah, but there are lots of metal fans that take it very seriously, which is why I'm like, okay, I don't know whether this record would be for them, because it's not taking itself very seriously. But at the same time, I think if you like the inherent silliness of heavy metal, you're gonna have a great time with Petrojonic Apocalypse. It's loads of fun. It's taking so much from what you love about the genre and just having a great time with it. And I don't know how you'd you'd come away from this and not have a great time. But yeah, you really need to be in the mindset that, like, yeah, heavy metal is silly. Like, celebrate that and have a good time with it. That's the real fun of this record for sure. Okay, I think we now need to do favorite tracks.
Is your favorite track Dragon? Because that's the right answer.
It is the right answer, isn't it? I was flip-flopping a little bit because I thought you might go for Witchcraft because I could see that you really, really liked Witchcraft.
Yeah,
And there was something about that obviously stood out, and it's quite a unique track amongst the record. I also was flip-flopping between Gila Monster as well as Dragon. I really like Gila Monster. I think, again, in the context of the record, it's a lovely little just snapshot of something else. Gives you a bit of a breather. Big stompy song, like a lot more mid-paced. It's not overtly like beating you over the head with the thrash riffs. It's like, yeah, let's have a little like mid-paced groove and bang our heads for a bit. Like, that was a real good
before
time.
Before you get into the main course, if you like.
This is it. But to say anything other than Dragon is daft, isn't it? Like, yeah. That is an absolute magnum opus. It is doing so much in its 9 minutes, and it's all engaging and all really fun, and just the builds to the crescendos and stuff just really set it off. It's an incredible song. So
Witchcraft's number two, but Dragon would be up there with the best heavy metal songs I've ever heard. So it's a clear winner. But perhaps less obvious is the further listening recommendations.
So I took some interesting, like, there was a lot of stuff floating around my head when I was listening to this. I've talked about Probot, I've talked about Caius, I've talked about Sabbath, and Motorhead as well. I was also considering a Cavell Attack record because I think they've got a sort of similar sort of like bluesy sort of desert rock kind of thing going on in amongst a sort of hardcore punk sort of sound, but it's not so overtly metal. So what I have chosen... another similar sort of heavy metal pastiche record. I have chosen The First by a band called Amulet. They have only released two records, sadly, but they are an awful lot of fun, and they are doing a very similar thing to what this record is doing, taking lots of influences by lots of classic heavy metal bands and turning it into sort of like a retro throwback record and, you know, very much celebrating the silliness of old school heavy metal. It's a real, real fun record. Maybe a little bit too long at 14 tracks, but it's a real fun time, and they definitely have very similar influences. There is an overtly goblin synth sounding song on Amulet's The First as well, which very much, you know, has parallels to this record as well. So yeah, I think that's the most obvious pick I could go for with this one. But the other one I wanted to choose was something a little bit more bluesy, a little bit more desert rock, because I feel like that influence is hitting an awful lot of this record.
Yep, yep.
And I don't think any other band does that better than Clutch. And I'm going to pick Earth Rocker.
Oh yes, that's a great album.
Yeah, that is bizarrely the only Clutch album I own.
That is the only Clutch album I've heard, Earth Rocker.
Yeah, well, there you go. And yeah, it's got a similar sort of thing. Like, you can hear a heavy metal influence permeating that record, but it is very much playing around in a sort of desert rock, psych blues space at the same time. And as a result, I think it's quite comparable to this record. But yeah, a little bit more overtly bluesy, I would say, that one. So if you're looking for something that, like, you know, hits those sort of beats, I think that's well worth checking out. A really fun record as well. Yeah. It takes you on a journey for sure, and it doesn't feel like there's any wasted space in that record whatsoever. So yeah, how about you, Alan?
Well, I've now got the title track of Earth Rocker stuck in my head now.
There you go.
So indeed,
Earth Rocker.
Yeah. So I felt that because King Giz had 27 studio albums, it was only fair to recommend another one of those albums. So my first further recommendation, and they're a hard band to recommend other albums because it's so varied. They're a little bit intimidating to get into.
Yeah.
So I would recommend Omnium Gatherum, which is 2 hours long. It's a double album. why not go in at the deep end? I'll say 2 hours long. Oh, no, it's 80 minutes. So, you know, not quite okay. 2 hours. So it really runs the gamut of everything. So it opens with a 15-minute psychedelic rock jam track called The Dripping Tap. Yeah. which is probably one of their their best songs. But that used to be what they did to like sort of warm up and test their gear and stuff before shows. It sort of evolved from that. But it's got, what's it got in there? We've got, well, according to Wikipedia, we got psychedelic rock, progressive rock, synth pop, heavy metal, hip hop, progressive folk. There are two metal songs on there. One's called Gaia. It's quite sludgy. And there's another one called Predator X. That's quite thrashy, but otherwise a very diverse mix. And it is one of five albums that they released in 2022.
That is an extremely prolific band, God almighty.
So my second band that I hinted at earlier is Osric Tentacles. If you never listened to our very odd space rock, and you could go for any of their albums, like Pulgent, Effulgent, or Jurassic Shift, or something like that. But I picked their most recent album, which is called Lotus Unfolding. How long ago was it between those albums? Quite a long time, I think. But if you're not familiar with Osric Tentacles, they are a psychedelic space rock instrumental rock band that have been around for a really long time, since the 1980s. They are like proper space stoners. But it's Lotus Unfolding came out in 2023, so actually the same year as this. But it's a really good example of their music, and I think a similar level of weirdness. It's also got that meditative build throughout the songs. Just a really great group, honestly, and a really fun album. So that's my second rec.
Perfect. Good stuff all around.
But you've got a few albums to listen to. You've got a few hours worth of bootlegs and 26 more studio albums to go. So I wish you
all the best on your journey. Definitely a band I would like to explore. I mean, I'd really like to hear Into the Rat's Nest, the other metal album in particular. I think, I just on the strength of this album alone, I'd like to hear them tackle that genre again. And I know that one is the overt, direct comparison to this record. It's funny, like I'm sure we're all familiar with the website Metal Archives, which has very strict rules as to what gets accepted as a metal band, and I was quite surprised to see that King Gizzard have actually been accepted. But it does mention that it is purely on the fact that they released two albums that are considered metal records, and I was like, okay, that's interesting. So that's definitely the other one I want to hear at some point. But I'm not adverse to exploring more of their back catalog, because I think they've got something interesting going on, and I can hear their psych rock and their sort of bluesy stuff permeating this record, and it's like, okay, maybe I do want to just hear more of that, an album of that, and see how that stands up, because they do sound like a real musician's band. I think I'd have a lot of fun with them, but definitely a band I want to explore further, because that is an incredibly strong record, and to think that it's coming from a band that don't traditionally play heavy metal is pretty incredible. They hit this one out of the park. It's a great time. Cool stuff. That brings us to the end of another episode of Cast Iron. Thank you very much for listening.
So if you like this episode, there are two ways to support the show. The first is to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. The most important is to share Cast Iron with a friend or two and spread the love of metal, as I do with my colleagues from time to time. Do they listen? I don't know, but they certainly don't tell me if they don't. You can find all the previous episodes on your favorite podcast app, apart from YouTube, where there will be some missing ones for copyright reasons. And you can find them all on our website, castironshow.co.uk. But we'll say thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you guys in the next one.
Take care.